so much of this is about security theatre and the demonstrable power of the state and cowing opposition through showing the power of the state. The torture of Julian Assange and the extreme conditions in which he's being held, his mistreatment in Belmarsh jail, his being confined to a glass box, to a large extent, they're doing it because they can, and they're doing it to show us that they can, to demonstrate the power of the state and to make us afraid. That fear is obviously particularly aimed at Tristan, for example, because it's meant to terrify Tristan about what's liable to happen to him and to the other people in WikiLeaks if WikiLeaks continues its work. It's a demonstration of it's an act of terror. It's designed to terrify us into stopping opposition to the security state and to terrify us into never again releasing evidence of war crimes. And I think when you look at the sheer malicious, the malign way that the judge Vanessa Bereitzer is conducting the court, and several of us here have been in the court, and all of us, I think, have just been absolutely stunned by the relentless and remorseless hostility of the judges and of the court, and the lack of even the appearance of civility that normally cloaks the horror of state violence that lies behind court proceedings. All that is an act of terror. It's an act designed to terrify us out of resistance, and that is the purpose of it. And the other thing that absolutely horrifies me, and we've heard several people, make comparisons to dictatorships and make comparisons to Nazi Germany. And it's not just, as Peter rightly said, that the mainstream media doesn't stand up to a fellow journalist, doesn't stand up for somebody whose only crime is to release state secrets, and state secrets of showing state atrocities. It's not just they don't stand up for him, they openly attack him, and they do so with glee and hatred. And that is something which I find very difficult to deal with. And again, it goes down to the disappearance of the civilities of society that we all took as a feature of the kind of society we believed we were living in. The attacks on Julian by the mainstream media are just awful. The attitude to Julian of the mainstream media is awful. You go onto Twitter on any discussion of Julian Assange and you will see countless mainstream media blue-ticked journalists on Twitter coming in to make jokes and callous remarks and nasty things about, oh, he's a rapist, all this absolute nonsense, things which actually they do know to be untrue, but they make them anyway because it's somehow an important part of their group identity as accepted members of the establishment to kick out at those who are other, who are not members of the establishment. And that direction of hatred and abuse at the other is absolutely a sign that we are going in the same direction as Nazi Germany. I'm obviously not saying we're all the way there yet, but it is very, very scary. I find the hatred and vilification, both in the court, the unrelenting attitude of the government, the unrelenting attitude of the magistrate. And I should say, one thing that was very clear to me, particularly during the week-long start of the extradition hearing, is that Vanessa Bereitzer is being ventriloquized. It's not just that she's coming in with her judgments written out, which is true. We go for this ludicrous charade where she comes in with already written judgments in hand. She sits there for 3 hours, barely pretending to be listening to the defense arguments, and then she reads out what she had written before she heard the argument in the first place. Personally, I don't believe that she herself is responsible for those judgments. It may well be her own handwriting. She may have written them down, but I'm fairly confident that from close observation of a week in the court, whenever there were questions being raised, she would fairly quickly move to an adjournment, then she would go away for 10 minutes, and then she would come back and answer the question. Doesn't have to indicate she's being told what the answer is, but my experience was, my impression was, that is the most likely explanation of what goes on in that court, that she is purely a cipher giving out judgments handed to her by the Home Office. And one of the fascinating things is that again and again and again, she has given judgments against the defense when the prosecution, when the representative of the US government didn't even object to what the prosecution was asking for. The United States government did not object to Julian Assange being seated with his lawyers out of the glass cage. His lawyers made a compelling case that the European Court of Human Rights had ruled that people should not be kept in glass cages during their trial, and also that he is physically and psychologically vulnerable, and that it is normal practice in UK courts for physically and psychologically vulnerable prisoners to be released during the course of their trial and be able to sit next to their lawyers, none of which was rebutted. The United States government stated it had no objection, and still she insisted for no reason at all that I could understand that he be kept in the glass cage. And we saw similar things. The United States government did not object to the postponement of the next stage of the hearing because his lawyers can't have access to him. The United States government were content to go along with postponing the next stage of a hearing to give his lawyers access to enable him to recover his health and to enable witnesses to be brought who wouldn't be able to get here because of coronavirus. And yet, even despite the fact that the prosecution asked for postponement, that the defense asked for postponement and the prosecution did not object, still, the rates said, no, you can't have it. And there are five or six of these judgments where the rates refused to go along. Maybe the most striking one was where she claimed that she did not have the ability to stop him being constantly strip searched in the jail. She claimed that she did not have the ability to stop him having his court papers removed from him in prison so he couldn't prepare for his court case the next day. And again, the prosecution said, yes, you do. The defense said she had the ability to ameliorate his prison conditions. The prosecution actually joined in with the defense, saying that is perfectly normal. You can do that. And again, she refused to do it initially on a false claim. She didn't have the power to do that, for which she was very roundly condemned by the International Bar Association. So this isn't to do with what's happening in court. It's not to do with what the prosecution and defense are saying. This is all coming from her. And I think it's all coming on instructions from outside. So what we're seeing is horrifying. You know, I cannot believe that I'm seeing somebody who I regard as a friend being crushed by the state, and that what is happening is extremely obvious to any observer, but it is being cheered on by the media. And I think this is an extremely reflection of the kind of society we are becoming. I think this is seriously, seriously worrying. I have one final thing I want to add, which is really a point of information. As Chris Williamson outlined, the government is seeking, and the UK and United States governments in collusion are seeking to export Julian, despite the fact that there is a bar on political extradition in the extradition treaty under which he's being extradited. The US and British governments have argued that the 2003 Extradition Act does not have a bar on political extradition. Therefore, the bar on political extradition act in the 2007 treaty cannot be valid, which is very strange because It's only the 2007 extradition treaty that allows the extradition to happen at all. You can't say you're making an extradition under the treaty but ignoring clause four of it. That's a very, very strange argument indeed. But that nonetheless is their argument, and it's an argument which Bereitzer has shown every sign of favouring. I pointed out to people that I know from my time in the Foreign Office that there must have been a process. When the 2007 extradition treaty was ratified by the UK with the United States, there had to be a process. It's a process I participated in inside the Foreign Office where it was checked before ratification that the treaty is fully enforceable in UK law, including Clause 4. That must have been done. And if there was if Clause 4 was not capable of being enforced in UK law, it could not have been ratified or would have had to have been flagged up for subsequent secondary legislation in order to ratify it. And so I've no doubt at all, in fact, it having been ratified, that the UK government is lying and that the UK government's own legal advice at the time would have been that Clause 4 can be enforced. I asked people on my blog to put in freedom of information requests for Foreign Office information on the consideration in the Foreign Office of the legal ability to enforce Clause 4 of the extradition treaty. People have now started to get an answer, because that was a few weeks ago. And surprise, surprise, the answer from the Foreign Office is that, yes, the Foreign Office does hold information on the ability to apply Clause 4 in UK law, but they cannot release that information because it would be too much work. It would be more than 3.5 days of work, and therefore it would be too costly. That is fascinating, because it's a key point that the case revolves around. And just simply to say, and personally, I don't believe them. I mean, I know the Foreign Office system. Even when I left the Foreign Office in 2005, all such documentation was electronic, and it would actually take you 2 hours, maximum 3.5 hours, not 3.5 days, to search it all out electronically and present it. And they're lying in saying it would be too much work to present that information. But they're not prepared to do it. I'm looking to, I'll be doing something on my blog. What I'm looking to do now is see whether we can break it down into a series of information requests, perhaps month by month, so they can't claim, because we were looking at a long period between 2003 to 2007. If we ask for documentation, different people ask for the documentation month by month, maybe we can get at it that way. But the government does have information on the key point, and they are continuing to hide it. Anyway, I think that's all I wanted to say today. Thank you very much, Steve.